everybody, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 108. I am Cody Cooper. This is a show, obviously, about Linux. We talk about everything involving the platform. Try to touch bases on a lot of things involving Linux, and the guy that helps the show reach that goal is my co-host, Steve Dordenor McLaughlin. Dor, how's it going today?
Going pretty good. A little bit hectic. I left work, had to drop the wife off, had to pick up the boys, had to come home, get the minivan, go to Goodwill, go from Goodwill to the grocery store, come home, feed them. They're fed. The one's still upstairs an hour after his bedtime doing his homework. So, you know.
Sounds like quite the caper.
Hey, I'm just a little bit tired.
Yeah, I know what it's like to bounce around like that, though.
Mm.
But so, hey, family's family.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have it any other way. How's everything going on your end?
Oh, it's going well. Speaking of family, mine's out of town. I'm just stuck at home with the dogs the next couple nights. So,
okay, how did you pull that off?
How did I pull that off?
What'd you have to promise?
I can't say that on the air. No. Actually, she's working out of town for the week, and financially it was more feasible for her to stay with family for a couple nights, and I thought, oh, broke my heart. That's just, I don't know what I'm going to do without you guys. And the minute they stepped out the door, I started looking up beer I'm going to go buy after the show tonight.
Well, tip, still send her goodnight texts and
oh yeah,
all that stuff. And really, here's where a good side tangent. To listen to Android App Addicts, a couple guys on there, not me, of course, because I love my wife, you can get apps where you can schedule text messages. So while you're at the liquor store picking up beer, you can schedule 9 o'clock. I hope you're having a good night, hon. You know, 10 o'clock, good night, hon. And then you can go get your beer.
Oh, I'll have to hit up Sean about that because I know it's him.
I didn't say his name, Sean. I didn't say it.
Okay.
I wouldn't do such a thing.
So what do you got for us this week, Dor?
Well, I guess the first thing is the basic. And there's a very basic way to put this, and that is planning and preparation is very important. I had long story short, I dropped my phone in a sink last night, my new to me Droid X2. So I immediately yanked the battery, did all this stuff, and I have it upstairs drying. We didn't do a Pod Brewers last night, combination thereof. I was a little depressed, so I literally went to bed at like 9 o'clock, which I never do. So I woke up today, you know, almost sore because I never get 8 hours of sleep. Got up sore, went to work. And then around 3 o'clock, I realized I haven't had a break and I haven't had lunch today because I'm so busy. And then around 5 o'clock, right when I'm getting ready to leave, I realized there are no notes ready for Linux for the rest of us tonight.
Oops.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And then about a half an hour before the show, I get a ding from Steve C saying, I'm at the Waffle House, probably going to go to Walmart. Then probably going to go fantasize about Apple hardware. And so you guys got the show completely, right? I don't have to do a Google Hangout or anything. And I just said, yeah, we're ready.
We're going to be fine. We're doing great so far. And yeah. Trust me, he will be fantasizing about Apple hardware at the Walmart. Not possibly, but definitely.
Right. And so I don't have as many links as I typically have for tonight. Because I spent a good amount this morning when I was walking to go get a refill on my drink or walking to the bathroom or walking to someone else's cube to ask something, updating my phone, getting my old Droid X ready to do stuff with, which of course was uncommonly painful because it's single core processor.
Mm-hmm.
So, in preparation for next week, I'm going to have a system in place where it's at least easier for Cody to view what could be coming up on the show and easier for me to thusly create the doc for the show. And I'll say, this does actually translate into Linux. And what I mean by that is, a good way to prepare for your first time running Linux, or your one of your first times putting on a box, is A, use a second computer. Always have a rock solid, stable system that you're used to available if you need to get something done and in a hurry, so you don't get frustrated. Two, whatever you have on that computer you're going to put Linux on, make sure, double make sure, and then triple make sure you have everything backed up, copied onto a thumb drive, copied to your network, copied to your insecure Dropbox, or something to that effect.
Insecure Dropbox.
Oh, utterly insecure. I don't care.
Yeah.
They're two-factor.
We could go on about that forever.
I know. And it's just horrible. And then thirdly, if you have the drive space, I honestly nearly insist of doing a full image backup of that drive, just in case there's something you forgot, like security tokens or something. So take things slow, prepare before you jump off of that cliff there called Linux. And then with that said, following up on last week, be prepared to ask for help ahead of time. Find a community that you at least feel comfortable with asking questions in, before you actually take that plunge, and I guarantee you everything will be a lot smoother and a lot easier.
I could not agree more. It's a much better experience knowing. I mean, imagine you taking that plunge for the first time. It's like kind of being pushed out into a lake, you know, and you look back and whoever pushed you isn't there, and it can be kind of scary. But if you realize that you're being sort of guided, and you have a community of people, whether it be people you actually know or just people online that you can ask questions, and you'll actually get good responses, and they'll help you toward a common goal, then knowing that is just going to take a lot of that tension off of you, and it's going to make the whole experience that much better.
Right.
As far as getting a second computer, I think that's a great idea, but if that's not economically feasible for you, you can do what I do, where use your current machine, just get a second hard drive. I literally have, I have a kind of a tall tower of space for like 9 drives in here. So what I have currently is a Windows drive, that I use for hacking my Android devices. Okay, that's all I use it for. And I have 2 other drives, which I have 2 different Linux distros on for testing. And then the other 4 drives that I'm getting ready for, I'm actually going to use it as a FreeNAS setup as well. So hypothetically, I mean, spend the $40 to $60, just get a tiny, you know, SATA drive. You just unplug the power connectors and then the SATA cable, boom, boom, throw the drive in there. You can start fresh. You don't need to worry about altering your other files whatsoever. You have a clean playing field. You mess up, you wipe it, you start over. And that, I think, is the safety net that a lot of people need. I think it's the one reason a lot of people don't do it, is think, well, what about my current computer? It's because it seems so foreign if you've never done it before. But if you have that ability to use a secondary device, like Dora's saying, what I'm suggesting, then that's going to be all the better. And it would be something I would suggest to someone, and I do suggest to people who want to start running Linux.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, you did, in my opinion, the utterly smart thing. Prerequisite to what explaining that. When you install any operating system, it will take the first primary bootable device. So if you have 2 hard drives in your computer, it will take the first hard drive and it will modify the master boot record. So if you have Windows on that first hard drive, then you install Linux to the second hard drive while the first hard drive is still connected, it will modify how that first hard drive boots, i.e. how Windows boots. So you have to make sure that it is seeing both hard drives and everything. I suggest what you did, which was, you got your second hard drive, you open up your computer, you took the first hard drive out, put the second hard drive in, then installed Linux.
Well, no. Yes and no. I have both drives actually screwed into the tower itself, but all I do when I want to switch back and forth to OS is I take the SATA power and data cables out of the back of one drive and just plug it into the other.
Gotcha.
That way you don't need to physically move the drive, because obviously spinning disks, the less movement, the better. So you just have them hard mounted into your tower, and if you have a big enough tower, you don't even have a big tower, like this is a mid-sized tower, there's plenty of room for it. So anymore, I do it so often, I just don't even put the side on the side plate on my tower anymore. I just constantly do that back and forth. That way you can experiment with the different different distros. But for that first time, having that drive, and if you're a tech person, your chances are you're going to have a SATA drive laying around. I even have some laptop drives I've got out of old laptops, just thrown in here, just for testing new distros, so I don't have to worry about wiping them. So if you have the ability to do that, that would be a great way to do it.
Right. Yeah, I do pretty much a similar thing. What I did was I had a desktop, two hard drives. I physically disconnected one of the hard drives, installed Windows, got everything up and running, disconnected that drive, hooked up the second drive, installed Linux, but boom, then plugged everything back up. And what I did on my Asus motherboard hit, I believe, F8, maybe F9. And then I could pick which hard drive I was booting to, and everything worked. The two OSs were isolated to their own drives. So when it came time to say, I don't want Windows anymore, or I want to change my Linux, I didn't have to worry about the other hard drive and a configuration getting messed up.
There you go. Yeah, if you have the ability in your BIOS to select, or in just any sort of boot up option to select that, that way you can keep the drives plugged in together. But just for, I don't know, maybe I'm just paranoid, I just go ahead and unplug them.
Oh, dang, nothing wrong with that. It works.
Yep, it does.
Okay, first link I'm going to throw out there is, I think a lot of postings on a lot of sites are not accurate. The titles, the headings of these postings aren't always completely accurate. Okay, when I see this posting over at gearburn.com, which I can safely say I've never heard of it before, it's entitled The Linux Survival Guide. Now, being a fan of zombie apocalypse movies and films and TV shows and non-reading literature, when I hear survival guide, I think the essentials of what you need in case of catastrophe or unplanned events. When I look at this article, it is in absolutely no shape, way, or form a survival guide. But what I will say, it is almost like a like a first aid pack. It isn't the whole survival guide, if you will, but it is something that I would suggest the newest of the new users look over, especially if you're thinking about Linux. Those are the people who I think can benefit the most from this posting. It tells you a lot of basics. And what I mean by that is, like, they say, where's my office? And basically, the very first line of it is completely wrong and completely a lie. It says, unfortunately, Office will not be available on Linux. You can install Office 2010 via Wine and have the 100% functionality in every Office product except for macros.
Yep.
I do believe macros will not work right. And I do believe there's a way to make them work right, but it is cumbersome and difficult. So that's inaccurate. But there are plenty of other Office suites that fill the gap, fill the void. Now, I've heard a couple people say it like this, and I will agree it's a very accurate way to put it. If you need an Office application for your own needs, i.e., I want to create something that I can print out, or I want to create something that I can email to people, LibreOffice and other Linux, Unix type Office applications will probably fit your need 99.999%. But if you're in a mixed environment where you're in an Office situation where five other people all have Office 2007. Well, one has Office 2003, one has Office 2007, one has Office 2010, and then you have LibreOffice, you might have issues passing documents back and forth.
Yep.
And by might, eventually you will come up to an issue.
And it could be something tiny, just as far as, I mean, I've had that happen with being sent I was sent a document by my boss, and when I brought it in, the formatting was all off. I mean, it just looked like garbage. So you're going to have those little things, but regardless, there is a way to accomplish it either through LibreOffice, which I use every day, and it's great, or like what Dora was saying, you can actually install most Windows software through Wine, and it'll work just fine. So regardless, I think the articles like this, aside from the horrible inaccuracies that we already uncovered, and I was reading some of the comments, and it gets worse from there. But opening articles like this at least answer those big questions that someone might be thinking when they first come into the platform, like, what am I going to do about Office? What am I going to do about games? Can I watch video? Those big things that people, I mean, honestly, just don't know about the platform. So I think even inaccurate articles like this can do more good than harm initially, because it sort of opens their eyes as to what's possible, gets them thinking about it, and gets them investigating it more thoroughly for themselves.
Right. And I'll say no article is 100%. And like I said back on episode one of this show will not be close to 100% accurate. The goal of this show is not to be perfect about everything we say, or else we would never stop doing show notes and we would only do an episode once every 6 months. So I understand people not being 100% accurate. I just hope that they take into consideration comments and go back and change stuff. And I will point out that this being a very open formatted show, the Mac Geek in the chat, who I can say is a very good friend, he's been around a long time. He also reminded us, do not forget, you could also use Office Online, Office 365, I think it's called. And I would be kind of shocked if that didn't work perfect or very near perfect, in contrast if you're on a Windows box. I would guess you would get the virtually exact same experience.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, except, of course, you're not running Internet Exploder. Oh, sorry, did I say that out loud? Don't take me that.
Did you say that out loud? I heard it.
I was just thinking
the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah, just so happens. Okay, now this next thing, again, I think they're just trying to get clicks, Cody. It's the only thing I think of, how these titles almost blatantly lie.
Fear is a motivator, I'll say that.
I guess so. Well, that and just in, I guess they think inaccuracy sounds better, because there's a posting over at LenoxArea.com, and it says, man, I'm going to do hard with this one. Santoku.
Got it.
Santoku? Perfect. Good.
Santoku.
They say Santoku is a new Linux distribution focused on security. That's not even close to accurate. Info lookup over at blogspot.infolookup.com or security something. I'm going to look that up real quick, because I do not want to be wrong when I talk about info lookup.
Yeah, because he mentioned this a while back, didn't he?
I want to say it was almost 6 months ago. That is at securitygossip.com, and I will make sure for a change, this will also be in the notes, so he gets a little SEO love. I want to say he told me about it at least 3 months ago, at least. Now, maybe that was alpha, maybe that was beta, whatever. Maybe they just released a new version. I don't know. But I will say, it's a Linux, and it's also, again, misleading, because it's a Linux distribution focused on security, yes, but it's focused on Android and mobile computing security. Mm-hmm. So it's not completely accurate, because here, if you look in the development tools, Android SDK, Apple IDE, BlackBerry SDK, Dropbox E, Clips, Windows Phone SDK, other things like that. So it really is sharply focused on mobile device security. I will say, if you have any interest at all about maybe web hacking, monitoring traffic from the iPhone 5 going to the really bad map server or something, this might be the like all-in-one stop shop that you need to see what's going on. And it's Santoku Linux.
Yep. Yeah. And I gotta say, sent us some information. I think he sent in a voicemail. It might have been to Android App Addicts or to Droid Nation a few months back, and Dora was fortunate enough to send me those links, because I missed them. But yeah, if you need to know anything about security, that is the guy to hit up, because having tools like this, I mean, obviously there are nefarious purposes you could use it for, but at least knowing how you might be monitored will help you get yourself more locked down. So I'm definitely looking forward to checking this out.
Oh yeah. And I'll say, here's the thing. Technically speaking, his 9-to-5 title, I don't think has anything to do with security. He really has a passion for it and he likes looking at it. I will say, I want to see if I can find this posting, but supposedly some kind of businesses have basically figured out, quote unquote, after, I don't know, 40 years, if you hire someone who is a hobbyist at what they do or at what you're going to hire them for, you get much better output, much better results, much better efficiency from that person. So I will say, when he does find a job that is actually security focused, I have very little doubt that he's going to shoot up the pay scale fairly quickly.
Yep. I can say that. Yeah, I mean, think about it. If it's something that you're passionate about, getting paid to do it, it's almost like you're getting paid to learn more about it and to teach people about it rather than just grind away for results and then pass them on to an employer. So, no, yeah, that definitely works.
Right, and I will say that distribution is put out by Via Forensics. Seems like that's all they really do is network security, it looks like, and a lot of mobile security. So that might be a good place to go out, find some good general information about that topic.
And as we get more mobile devices on the market, you know, it's just going to become that much more of a fertile ground for attacks like these. So be preemptive and get more knowledgeable about it beforehand. Cannot hurt you.
Oh, yeah. And I'll say, I've been in and around in business, programming, support, database management, server administration, network administration, all kinds of things. Nothing is like security in a business. And here's the real reason why. A, everybody hates you. I will say that right now. Everybody in every department on every facet of that organization will hate you because they think your job is to slow everything down and make things difficult. But in reality, you have the only job that will never end. There will always be a job, a need, and a demand for security, and it's only going to grow wider and faster where you can get a job.
Yep. And I mean, it's such a versatile field too. You could literally hop around. It's not like you're laser focused on, you know, one project or, you know, I mean, yeah, you can literally take it just about anywhere.
Yeah. And I'll say it's growing at such a rate where, like, now you can say tech support, enterprise level tech support. And it's really, that's it. You do tech support. What do you do tech support for? Anything they have, it's tech support. Where security is really starting to get these defined fields, these defined positions, basically. Mobile security, web security, you know, network security, to where you can really hone in. And that, I think, is just going to keep expanding until we have 800 different types of security jobs you can have.
Okay. Looking forward to seeing it grow.
Yeah, as long as they don't slow my job down.
Yes. What else we got, Dor?
Well, this one, I'm not going to lie, I only put in the show notes because I thought it looked cool. And it's a posting over at worldofgnome.org, which was a site I literally didn't know about until like 3 or 4 shows ago. And they do post some interesting stuff. I will say the downside of it is it's only GNOME stuff, it looks like. But the plus side is then that means they might talk about something that other sites might not deem as relevant enough or important enough, or they can't lie about the headline and put security or something in front of it. The only way I can describe this software is, whoa, cool, man. It's called Mandel Builder, it looks like. And it's the title of the posting is Enter a World of 3D Fractals with Mandel Builder. Now, I don't completely understand what a fractal is, but to the people at home, what a fractal is, it's a small, very, very small equation or pattern that is then allowed to grow or expand at a calculated rate. And doing such things can cause near amazing patterns to emerge. Well, to do it in 3D means just another level of complexity that can be done to a 3D fractal kind of thing. I would say there is probably genuine science that can be utilized by this, and you know, they use, you know, this for, but at the same time, I believe you could use it for a lot of art type things as well. If you just need something on the side of your website that looks cool, there's more than a couple of these fractals that I could see. Man, there's one there that looks crazy.
Yeah, it's Dor's trying to do the best he can to sort of verbalize what these are, and I gotta tell you that even that's pretty difficult. But I mean, imagine almost like a 3D rendering engine that just like you put in, almost like imagine like planting a little seed, and then it just grows into this really trippy and weird looking thing, and they're all just beyond crazy unique. So yeah, this is interesting. But yeah, people making wallpapers out of this stuff, and then there's a video doing like a, you know, like a walkthrough of one of them, which is just like huge, almost like the size of a city, and it's just insane.
Right. Well, that's the thing about fractals. If you let them grow, if it's the proper type of mathematical equation, they will literally go on forever, but they'll make almost near never-ending patterns. So see, sequential growth. The one that I think might best show this, but it's hard to tell, is there's a image on the page down towards the bottom that's a red and white, almost looks like blood splatter on something white.
Yeah.
But if you look close, you can see the cracks go in what looks like maybe a pentagon-esque shape, and they just keep going in and keep going in and keep going in until you cannot actually see them anymore. But mathematically speaking, they keep going in forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is cool.
But yeah, definitely go check it out. And I love to see this kind of 3D art too, and to know that it comes from something like this. I mean, the possibilities are endless. So yeah, it's very, very cool.
Yeah, and apparently Mandelbrot set is a set of mathematical sets of points whose boundary is distinctly and easily recognizable. Okay, well, sure. That comes straight from Wikipedia. I'll take their word on it.
Sure. Oh, and it's Mandel Bulber. M-A-N-D-E-L-B-U-L-B-E-R. Mandel Bulber.
Sorry, a little dyslexia there.
That's okay. Yep. But no, yeah, if you guys like 3D art, definitely check this out.
Yeah. I honestly, if I had time, I would really like to try to just test with this and see if I could come up with a cool background for it. And if you have cool backgrounds for it, don't forget podnuts.com/forums. I think would be a very cool place to share them at.
Most definitely.
Okay. Now, it's almost become mandatory, Cody, and I almost feel obligated, dare I say, to bring some pie news, because everybody likes some kind of pie. I just got to say that again. Okay. Short history. Raspberry Pi got released. The Model A still hasn't been released. The Model B was released. The Model B was doubled in RAM, up to 256 megs of RAM. No Wi-Fi on board, no Bluetooth on board, but Ethernet, HDMI, all the other stuff that was already there is still there. Well, they've once again upped the Model B specs. Originally, this thing was supposed to come with 128 megs of RAM. At launch, they said, surprise, there's actually 256. And now on October 15th, the Model B will now ship with 512 megabytes of RAM.
Which as of record date was yesterday, so it's available now.
Well, it'll probably wouldn't shock me if it would take at least a week for the distributors to get rid of their old stock.
Yeah.
But I will say they are saying they are still moving at a near frantic rate. So with that said, you know, tomorrow they might have them available, which of course can only be good.
So, this is because I was reading something online earlier and they were talking about like the next version of the Pi. Is this what they're talking about, or is there something else on the horizon? Because I've yet to buy one. I mean, I got to play with a lot of them in OLF, and I really, really want to get one, especially to support a vendor, which I'll mention in a minute. But I mean, like, what's down the pipe as far as you know? I mean, is this the one to jump on, or do I need to wait another 6 months for something bigger and better? I mean, obviously, that's a possibility, but what do you know about it so far?
Well, I would say there's no time like the present. If you wait, I think you will never stop waiting, because they're going to keep updating this thing. They're not going to sit around. They're not going to let it get dry and stagnant, is what I gather. These are still development releases, because they're not coming in cases. They're just bare boards. They don't expect end company. They really don't expect normal people to buy them yet, because you buy it, then you got to do all the work to get an operating system on it and all the work to get a case and all this kind of work. So they're not really publicly, they don't expect the public to buy them yet.
They're not ready for prime time.
Well, I would say they are. It depends on how you want to use it. You can, there's no reason why you can't go out, buy 20 of these things now, because there's, you can now buy more than one. Design like a home brewing thing, put it together, advertise it, and sell it as a complete solution. So they're ready for prime time for you to make them into something prime time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Right. And I do believe maybe by latest March, they're going to have the Model A and the Model B both out. One is going to have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on it. The other one, the Model B, does not. Whatever RAM the Model B has, the Model A is supposed to have double. And let me tell you something. A Raspberry Pi with a gig of RAM.
it's going to be crazy.
There's no doubt my mind will run good, not fantastic. It's not $1,000 computer fast, but it is definitely competitive with a low-end computer, I'll say.
Yeah, but dollar for dollar, pound for pound, I mean, it's just a heck of a lot of computing power.
Yeah, my latest saying is now bang for the buck feature. It is super difficult to get as much computing power and possibility as you can with a Pi.
I agree.
And this link will also be on the notes, especially if you visit our friends over at eBay. The actual seller is called, where's that? Oh, Cook. Man, that's too small for me to read. Cook Tech Inc. Yeah, Tech Inc. These are the fine fellows that are offering. I just got to say it like this. By far the best quality Raspberry Pi case in existence, and the simplest to use and put together, and it has padding inside. Okay. There's no doubt in my mind you could have a Raspberry Pi in that case screwed on. If a zombie apocalypse happened, kill 10 to 15 zombies with that thing in your hand, using it as a weapon, and then plug it back up and it will work. Minus the zombie juice.
Yeah, the brains.
Yeah, so I digress about that. But
no, Dor and I got to, well, actually, Dor, you own one of these, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do, and I'm not going to lie. I was given, quote-unquote, serial number one off of the manufacturing line from your friend and my friend, Russ Winner, at thetechiegeek.com. Mm-hmm. Nobody noticed while I was there, so I was happy. I slept with my Raspberry Pi just because we had rooms full of people, and I didn't want anybody to get any fancy ideas. Let's, you know, hide his case on him.
No,
man, don't touch my Pi case.
But I got to tell you, I've been doing a lot of investigating in the cases because, like I said, I want to get one because I was really, really fascinated. And what's really cool is you're having these custom distros made specifically for the Pi now, to where even if you're not using it for like an Arduino type of purpose, you know, to put and attach extra boards to it to make something bigger. I mean, right off the bat now, even as it just posted like 2 months ago, there's so many more things you can do with it. But I'm looking at all these cases and physically a lot of them look similar. But the one thing that struck me about this, when Russ put one in my hand, the weight to it. I mean, it's not like ridiculously heavy where you're like, Jesus is heavy, but I mean, it's just solid.
Yeah.
You could defend yourself with this case. You know, one of the things I can't remember if I said it on the show for while we were OLF, but I said, this thing is perfect. Like, imagine like your 80s action film. You know, you have the one kind of side character who toward the end of the film, he's sitting there with the hero going, oh, wow, wasn't that a big debacle? Oh, look out. And he pushes the hero, and then there's the villain. He shoots the bullet, hits the guy. And then, of course, you think he's dead. Well, and then lo and behold, the flask or the badge or whatever took the bullet. Like, this case could take a bullet.
Right.
It totally could.
I cannot argue. And I will say in the chat, Jessic one asked about what kind of network interface. It does have Ethernet 10/100. I don't believe it's gigabit built onto the motherboard, but there's no reason why you cannot use a USB interface to either a Wi-Fi dongle or another Ethernet adapter, which people have use the USB to Ethernet and turn the Raspberry Pi into a gateway, which I think is pretty good. And I will say, we also had another comment in the chat where somebody said, wouldn't a crowbar work better? Oh, the Mac Geek. Wouldn't a crowbar work better in a zombie apocalypse versus the Pi case? Well, I'll say, number one, a crowbar probably costs more, and two, a crowbar can't run Doom.
There you go.
Because, you know, if it runs Doom, it automatically is for the win.
I can't argue with that. And Matt Geek, if you're going to start talking about weapons we're going to be using in a zombie apocalypse, that's a whole nother cast. And trust me, I have them all planned out, buddy. Just hit me up on Google+. We'll geek out over it forever.
Right. And I'm not going to lie. I mildly harassed Buyer Brown about doing this. I can't go into too much detail or he will kill me, but basically doing a zombie real/fantasy podcast, episodic, chapter almost based podcast. And I don't know if I got him talked into it yet.
I'll hit him up. We'll get something going.
Cool. And I will let you guys know here, first place, I think this is announced on maybe. There is going to be a Solus OS podcast. It is going to be hosted by Dude Man and myself. And I will say, his real name is Dude Man. Okay. If that's not epic, I don't know what it is. But it's going to be basically Linux focused, but community driven. And what I mean by that is it's not only going to be how great Solus OS is. Oh, we love it. It works perfect. No, we are going to talk bad about it as probably as much as we talk good about it, because all is fair in love and war in podcasting. There's no sucking up. There's no where we're worried about sponsorship or anything else. And the idea of this was prompted by Ikey, the main developer of Solus OS. It's going to be mainly community driven. And what I mean by that is somebody puts up a link and says, I think it would be cool to talk about this. Somebody will ask a question. How do I do this? Somebody will give a solution. Here's how I did do this. And that's the kind of stuff we're going to talk about. And we're going to try to have user application developer and developer interviews from time to time in the cast. And by time to time means as often as we can get them. because me and Dude Man believe the cast should not be about us talking. Solus OS is maybe the most dynamic yet active and friendliest community for any distribution I ever met in my life. Ikey is maybe the most methical, moral, and ethical.
That's going back.
I know. Both the most moral and ethical the developer that I've had a chance to interact with. I've not interacted with a lot, so don't slam me on this. I've only interacted with very few, I'll also say. Mm-hmm. And he has his head on so uncommonly straight for being like 23 years old, which blows my mind. How he's not at the bar every night and chasing women and, you know, doing that kind of thing amazes me. But I salute him. And if you want to know more about the podcast, one of the primary mediums of communication is going to be main.solusos.com, which should redirect you straight to the Solus OS forums. We are going to have entire topic categories devoted to the podcast and links to the feeds, links to the notes where people are going to contact us about content all around. It's going to probably be there.
I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, if you guys haven't follow Ikey on Google Plus, a lot of in reading the stuff he's putting on there, it brings a lot more of a human element to what he's doing, which you don't really get from a lot of developers making their own distro. So yeah, definitely hats off to him. I'm looking forward to hearing this show.
Right. And I know this is going to be almost unfair. What I'm about to say, but this is the honest truth. One of the things I learned about Linus Torvald was Linus Torvald has never talked business with a single company ever. Linus Torvald has never been involved with any artwork for Linux. Linus Torvald has never talked patent issue number one with anybody. And it's by design. He does not want to do that. He feels like he shouldn't do that. Thus, he does not do that. He does kernel development, maintaining patches, approving code. That's what he does. A lot of other developers seem to say, well, let's get into business. Let's talk about a backer. Let's go shoot for getting this ad revenue generation thing going. Let's, you know, try to do artwork. Ikey only wants to develop, period. And to be honest, he's good at it. So I encourage him to stay on that route. And I have little doubt in my mind he's going to get any diversion on that.
Well, that's good. And ultimately, both in his case, the example with Linus that you provided, really just know what your strengths are and work to them. And, you know, there are lots of distractions out there that you can easily be swayed by. So just focus on what you want to do and what you're good at, and the rest will follow.
Exactly. Yeah, do good things. Good things will happen to you. Now, I will say, I am starting the organization, the preparedness, to link back. I'm finalizing the prepared something, whatever, to my first set of videos I'm going to produce here since the Kickstarter. I have
very good.
I have a lot of it mapped out, designed out. I think mind mapped is the one type of application.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
And I will say one hurdle I could foresee happening quickly is, well, I need to make sure I properly watermark these videos. And what I mean by that is I don't want to DRM brand kind of thing. No. Just a simple in the bottom of the corner watermark explaining who, where, what, why, when, link, URL, title, whatever. I almost got a little nervous when I started looking this up. I almost got a little bit scared when I was looking this up because I thought to myself, isn't watermarking kind of like a near professional thing? And everybody keeps telling me how video is so far behind in the Linux world. Am I going to be able to do this? Is it possible for me to do this? Am I going to have to take the whole video, send it up to Steve C and offer him a Walmart gift card to put a watermark on my video.
Or an iTunes gift card.
Or an iTunes gift card. A white app iPad. iTunes gift card.
Please, Dora, tell me we can do this in Linux without Steve C and his Mac items. Please.
Well, here's how I found it. We were prepping to do the Solus OS cast number one. And once their community found out we were doing this, they joined in the Mumble server open at openspeak.cc. And at one point in time, there was 25 community members in that Mumble server, chatting, BSing, talking about technical issues, applications they like. Could this application work? Does this application need updated? And they were just going off. And I joined, and I literally just sat there and did nothing. And I will say, Steve C said he sold all of his Macs, but Steve, remember, we know, because he's in the chat, we know you have one more. Besides the Mac headphones, which I'm not even going to go into.
I was going to mention that. He has gone on the record saying he no longer owns any Apple devices, and I congratulated him. So,
well, there's still one more. I know there
is. No, okay. What is it?
It was a Mac Mini, I believe. It wasn't like a iMac, and it wasn't a MacBook. Something else.
So a Mac Mini?
Something like that.
Okay.
Well, and I'll say, and I just sat back and I let them talk the whole time. I don't think they even knew who I was. I'm okay with that. They were just chatting, and then somebody said something and paused. And then I, you know, said like one thing and just sat there. And I did nothing else. And Steve C's trying to say we're nuts. Yeah, no, we know. And I said, just because one guy started talking about video, and what about a Solus OS YouTube channel? And I took that as an opportunity to say, well, wait, to have a successful Solus OS YouTube channel, we should watermark all the videos, right? Right. And I said, well, how are we going to watermark these videos? And the guy immediately piped up and said, in a thick UK accent or a Scottish accent, I want to say how easy it was to do in OpenShot. OpenShot is, to me, there's only two feasible video editors for people who don't want to go to college to learn how to use them. OpenShot and KDEN Live, which I think is actually KDEN Live, but I think it's KDEN Live. Mm-hmm. And he sent me a link to a YouTube video that was all of 2 minutes long. And you know, if it's taking 2 minutes for them to do it in a video, it's actually like a 40-second process, you know? So I just watched the video and I said to myself, this is nearly too easy. So I am looking forward to adding watermarks in the videos with OpenShot. And I definitely thanked him. And I said to myself, this is why community's great. I didn't even have to do any research. I just sat around, BS'd with them, heard about some issues, made a comment or two. And then I asked my question. Blink of an eye, it got answered by someone who is not a video professional, by someone who is not on a Macintosh, by no one like that, but by a hobbyist who likes the idea of videos. So I say once again, the hobbyist for the win.
There you go. And yeah, having your video, especially, you know, something like what you're doing, watermarked, is just going to help you in the long run, especially with quality control and such.
Yeah.
So let's see. We covered watermarks. What else we got, Dor?
Okay. This is probably going to be something that we are going to come back to at a later date. One of the things that I will say I'm not completely innocent of, okay? I'm no way casting stones. We do have a problem in the open source free software technology field as a whole, okay? Everywhere around, we do have a little bit of a problem, and that is that it is absurdly controlled and influenced by men and men only type of goals, I'll say. And by that, I know I might sound sexist just by saying that, but having, what did James James Brown said it, I think, pointedly. It is a man's world, but it would be nothing without a woman's touch. And that is James Brown, Godfather of Soul. We as people need to actively remember when we are posting things, when we are communicating, and when we are talking about issues, we take into account there are other people in this equation than just ourselves. It might not be instinctive or easy, and I don't think it's either. I think it's very easy to fall into the trap and just think of my issues, my concerns. There is this interview over at Geek Speak that I was told I had to listen to, and because I dropped my phone in the sink, I was not able to listen to it. I hope that sounded believable. But there's an interview with who was an active kernel developer. Okay. This is no slouch. This is someone who took time, who educated, researched, and punched out hardcore kernel code. Okay. And this was an interview with her talking about things that she saw that were issues in open source, amongst them being everything being utterly geared towards women. And I will say, if you go to adainitiative.org, I believe that is her site that is basically put together to help promote the idea of having women in open source is a plus. We might talk a little bit in the future about this, get into a little bit more depth, talk about actual issues and not just being a man and saying there's issues out there.
Yeah. We need to basically make this community open to anyone. We shouldn't have to, I mean, any group of people, whether it be, you know, male, female, sexual orientation, whatever, feel like they're, discluded from anything. And plus, I mean, anyone that can provide any sort of, anyone that can help us as a community get better, why not make them comfortable in any of these situations? So,
yeah. And
just keep it open for everybody.
Right. And even though right now in the business and enterprise world, the developers might be a huge percentage of men, what I said earlier does apply. We're not looking for people to hire people who are already hired doing this. The hobbyists are the ones that are important. And trust me, the more women we can get involved, the only result will be better code, better applications, better kernels, better support, more acceptance. So I don't see how it can be a bad thing.
Yep, I'm all for it.
Okay, this next one is an app, I don't want to say for everybody because it's not for everybody. It's for anyone who wants to get into creating Linux scripts, or someone who's already into it and never heard of it. There's basically a application, I'm going to say, in a very nice shapeware form, but I believe it's actually a script itself. And it is called new_script. What this basically is, it's a command that you can run that will help you with your basic format and layout of scripts. I believe it's called an ncurses interface. It's like a DOS interface where you basically type in new_script and then like a couple commands, including the script name that you want to call it, and hit enter. And it will ask you, it will roll through a questionnaire setting up some basic defaults and basic comments that are going to be in this script file when you go to edit it. So I think this is a good way to get standardization and good solid base of information if you are going to start a new script. So I will encourage people to at least bookmark this. So if in the future you toy around with making an new script, this might be a good start.
I'll definitely have to look into this because I want to, because I mean, I hear you guys talking about, you know, how you guys have set up scripts for automation. And the bigger my setup gets, the more time I'm going to want to save. So getting some of these in place is definitely going to help me and can help anyone. So having a kind of a jumping off point like this is very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say the hardest thing about doing this kind of thing to me is standardizing and making things uniform from task to task to task to task. 90% of the time, you know, if I do 5 things within a week, they look completely different, you know, and that's not good for anybody.
I hear you.
Okay. Okay, this next one I did mention on Linux Basics. I feel like I have to mention it here because it is absurdly powerful. Okay. A lot of people in the tech field are at least aware of Google Analytics. Google Analytics is a way that where you can get a metric ton of information, stats, graphs, and reports on your website's activity. Where did people come from when they're looking at your page? What did they click when they were on this page? How long did they stay when they were on your page? What was the exit link they used for the site? What country are they in? What browser are they using? What plugins are they using? I mean, and a half a billion other things, it seems like. Well, I like to explore my options away from Google whenever possible, because you never know when Google's going to kill something is the safe thing to say to everybody, because Google does have the power to just drop the hammer on anything. One of those really rumor laden sites that I don't trust anything they say, that 3 weeks ago said they believe FeedBurner is going to be killed. Now,
what?
To the majority of the population, they would say, so what's FeedBurner? To the podcasting world, this is like a complete decapitation. Okay. We rely on FeedBurner for one big thing. If you go to podnos.com and we have the RSS feed physically living on podnos.com, and then there's an issue with podnos.com, nobody will get any shows. The feeds will appear dead, non-existent. Now, hypothetically, let's say Steve let podnos.com domain name expire, and let's say Bryce from TechNibble picked it up just to poke at him. Well, then, technically speaking, if Steve's hosting all the files on podnos.com, but he's using FeedBurner as the aggregator, so when you say, I want to subscribe, you actually get a FeedBurner link, well, then all Steve has to do is go into FeedBurner, change where the feeds are pointing to, and he can put them, and he can point them to newpodnuts.com, mm-hmm. and the listeners to the episodes will never know anything happened. Everything will just appear to work.
Right.
And that's a huge advantage to people who care about stability in their feed and uptime, especially to announce emergencies like the site's down or, you know, Mike Tech bought it out from underneath me or something, mm-hmm. which of course neither of them would do that, but you know what I mean?
No.
Okay. Now back to the actual story. Okay. Powic is a open source analytics engine. Now, what I mean by that is a huge, gargantuan, whopping majority of things Google Analytics can do, Powic can do. Powic has really nice reports, really nice options, really nice output, and is actually customizable where Google Analytics is almost not customizable. You put a code in the bottom of your page or every page or in your CMS, and then it's there. Powic, you can individually point to sites, domains, subdomains. So, for instance, I could very easily have a bunch of subdomains under doordoorgeek.com, test.doordoorgeek.com, news.doordoorgeek.com, blog.doordoorgeek.com, and all this, but have them all report to the same PWIC server, which means I'll just have one place to go and get everything I need. Well, because PWIC is open, you host your own server instance and it's actually configurable. There's a little trick you can do. On Craigslist entries, on eBay entries, on some forum entries, on probably even Google Plus postings, okay? On Facebook postings even, probably. You can insert a little bit of information into that posting and have your PWIC server, back at your main server, show analytics on what's happening on Craigslist or on eBay or on these other sites. So technically speaking, Steve C could put a MacBook Air on Craigslist, put this code in on there, and he can actively see there was 100 people that looked at my site or my posting on Craigslist, and 40 of them were inside of my zip code. This thing is going to move quick. You know, he can actually know these kind of things. And then he can also know how competitive is this. You know, I had 80 people in the last hour go here. I've never had that many people. And then if somebody says, well, I can offer you half of it, then he can know, well, I don't know. This thing's really active. And can I think about it for a couple hours? You know, hoping somebody else calls in that time. So to me, this is a really, really cool hack, true definition of the word hack, on PWIC to make it do things that you want it to do.
And I got to tell you, from my experience of, you know, doing eBay selling, and now I'm starting to look at Craigslist a lot more. Yeah, this could definitely be valuable. But I gotta tell you though, just knowing me and my personality, if I had access to this type of information, especially from like a mobile device, I would just be staring at it the whole time. It's going, oh look, I got another hit from here. Oh, I got this. I got that. And yeah, for like one-off sales or something, it might not be as valuable. But if you were, for instance, if you're doing computer repair via Craigslist, or any sort of like regenerative business or sale, or even buying on there, yeah, this could be definitely valuable. And it just shows the versatility of PWIC as a platform rather than going with something more proprietary.
Right. And I'm not sure I have the exact correct article, but I am going to link to it in the show notes because I said the word hack. Hacking is technically a term that everybody at least believes was created at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, for people modifying how model railroad train sets worked. So the, so the core definition of hacking is taking something, reusing it in a way that you see fit, or modifying its inner workings. So like technically speaking, me putting Linux on my MK802 is a hack because it came with Android.
Using a device or utilizing something for a purpose that wasn't intended.
Right.
Is another way of putting it. But yeah, I've read that article about the train track thing before. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So when somebody at work says, oh, he was a hacker, where's he at? I'd like to meet him. You know?
Right.
Hackers do not, in 99.99% of the time, hackers do not do anything malicious, evil, anything. It's crackers that are the ones you really want to stay away from and make sure your network is protected from.
Most definitely. But you should already try to keep your network secure anyway.
Well, yeah, of course.
CYA. Dora, I threw something in the dock there. You mind if I bring this up?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I got to say that overall, me as a consumer, Asus has been a great company to me. I own several of their products, and being, you know, they were the manufacturers of the first release. I mean, I would say, in my opinion, the first really successful Android tablet, the Transformer, and then its subsequent varieties, and now the Nexus 7. They were really, really great. But a few months back, they were saying how some of their newer tablets and their newer laptops will only run Windows 8, specifically your tablets. And I was just like, oh, geez, this sucks, because they make some great, great devices. I mean, just across the board, everything. But I really, really dig their tablets. But today, they announced, or today I was reading on OMG, Ubuntu.co.uk, that they're offering some new Windows 8 laptops that will also be available with Ubuntu as a secondary option. Dell tried this years ago, where they had, you know, some of their pro and consumer laptops available with obviously Windows 7, and then you could put Linux on it. But then that kind of got shifted under the rug, you know, because in my experience, I've seen that Microsoft kind of gets wind of this, and then being that they're the majority share, they can go to these hardware manufacturers and say, you won't be doing that anymore. And then they don't. But to have this as an option on it, like, because I mean, you gotta think of it, Asus. I mean, it's not like a top two or top three name as far as like hardware is concerned, if like the general public, but I mean, they're a big name, and to have them sort of stamping out there and saying, we will have Ubuntu as an option, it's just going to gain that much more mind share.
Right.
Even though it might not be your favorite distro, it's going to get people thinking, well, what is that? So I love to see this happening. And I got to tell you, I've never been disappointed with an Asus device, whether it comes to their monitor, a CD burner, laptop, tablet, nothing. They've always been very high quality, very sturdy, nothing cheap, nothing chintzy. Some of their laptops, I mean, whatever. You get a low-end laptop from whoever, it's going to feel about the same. It's plastic.
Exactly.
But yeah. I mean, but no, I'm really, really glad to see this. What do you think about it, Dor?
Dude, I'll say this. Nobody makes better motherboards, period. They are, in my mind, the utterly best that work the longest. I even like their video cards and other internal hardware. I've had nothing but success with like their routers and stuff, which I didn't think I would have luck with. I have played with a couple of their laptops. They seem to be just as good, if not better, than your average ones. They might not have as many ports as a Lenovo, and they might not be as thick as a MacBook Air, but if you take all the other people in the market and take a look at their normal laptops, they're going to be almost identical. I will say I didn't like their desktops, but I don't like most people's desktops. Dude, I gotta say, this to me sounds like the perfect device for me. I'm a fan of smaller size. I don't want to carry around a lunch tray, okay?
Right.
This thing is 11.6-inch screen, 1366 by 768, which it ain't fantastic resolution, and thank God Steve ain't here, but it's good enough for my near-blind eyes. 1.1 dual-core Intel Celeron 847, 4 gigabytes of RAM, 500 gigabyte internal HDD, which I'm going to guess is spinning disk, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, at that price, it can't be solid state.
Right. Integrated graphics, which I can tell you, in my experience, Linux with integrated graphics is like bread and butter. It works so well with integrated graphics. Even one USB 3.0 port, HDMI in slash out. That's hot. You record see abusing the crap out of that one. Hardwired Ethernet and Wi-Fi, unlike some other people's hardware. And it said it was 299 euros, which is less than 400. I know that.
Yeah, it's about 430, somewhere in there, which, I mean, is not bad at all.
Wow.
I mean, I love to see HDMI hit these. I mean, you could almost call it an ultrabook. I mean, it's super slim. It's super sleek. For like an everyday laptop, I mean, yeah, the next one I buy, it's definitely going to have to be light, because I got to tell you, I was lugging around one of my POS HPs I had when I went to OLF, and the thing weighs probably upwards of, I don't know, six, seven pounds, and man, it was just killing me. So yeah, as far as a mobile laptop, obviously they're all mobile, but as far as a laptop for me from now on, I'm going to go with the smaller screen. Maybe not 11.6, but maybe a 13 to 14.1, but I want it to be thin. But to see something like this with HDMI in and out, that means obviously out to another display, okay, in, like from importing from a camera.
Oh, yeah.
Or, yeah, okay, so get that spin, and to see USB 3 on a device like this. Man, you're going to see so many more USB 3 things coming to the market soon. I mean, I already have a few devices, but as of right now, I can only use them on my a desktop. But to have a laptop with this kind of capability is awesome. 1366 by 768. I mean, you're not going to... Dude, if you're really, really wanting to do high-def video on the go, why are you buying a $400 laptop anyway? Yeah, yeah. I mean, your standards just are not meeting your needs. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I think they even have a second model from there, too.
Well, yeah. The two quickies I didn't pick up on. This Ubuntu version is cheaper than the Windows version. Okay. I said in the past, it's going to be really hard. And in fact, sometimes the Linux version might be more expensive because they're not getting these trialware things where they get discounts and kickbacks, but they figured out a way to make it cheaper. I will say the only guys who can do this are the biggest of the big manufacturers who have a lot of clout and stroke. Asus doesn't need to make these netbooks kind of thing. They make so much money off their motherboards and other hardware, I'm sure. And they're so successful in the tablet market, they can probably afford to tell Microsoft, we're not worried about that super supreme discount you guys are talking about. Just give us the normal price. So theirs is actually cheaper. And I will say the second version of this has less RAM and a smaller hard drive. And I'm not sure. And this price, I'm not sure about. This one confused me because it looked like the same size screen, same processor, less RAM, two gigs of RAM, same graphics, possibly 320 gigabyte hard drive, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, USB 3.0, just like the other one. And I will say the good news is this is expected to retail for less than $599 price tag for the Windows version. It does look to me sleek enough, sharp enough, light enough to where they can charge more than your average 12-inch laptop. But, you know, you have to pay that Windows tax. I'm going to start saying that now. Windows tax when you buy these things.
Definitely. Yeah, and having them side by side too to offer the either option for people to be able to look at it and go, oh, well, okay. And my math was wrong. I was thinking of pounds because I used to buy a lot of.
This is euros. Yeah,
I used to buy a lot of DVDs from the UK. But no, one US dollar is about, as of today, the 16th of October, is 0.76 euros. So you decrease it by about 25% for the US dollar if it was priced a euro. So 2.99, you're looking at what. What 150 is 75, wow. So about $225 for that. Dude, for that higher end. Yeah,
that's a steal. Well, and the good news is Arch people and Debian people and Fedora people know if someone can put Ubuntu on it, it's really quick for someone else to be able to put virtually any other Linux distro on it with very little work.
Yeah. If it can run Unity, it could probably run just about anything.
You said it, not me. Send all hate mail.
I know. I did set it. Type it out, put it on a shirt, put my name under it because it happened.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
In the chat, they're saying it's the other way around. It's going to be $391 is the conversion from the euro to the American dollar. And I don't know because I can't do math on a live broadcast.
Well, I'll go to xe.com, which is what I use for... I mean, I'm not saying that that's incorrect. I'll do the math later. Either way, it's still one hell of a deal, and I'm looking forward to picking one up.
I agree. Sub 400 is a really sweet spot as far as I'm concerned for laptops. Once you get below 4, it then becomes economically feasible to push it up instead of saying to wait till Christmas. Maybe we can get it now, you know?
Right. No, and that dollar figure does sound right. I was doing the conversion incorrectly in my head. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, a great device. I wish Asus the best of luck with this because I would love to see them offer more devices with Linux as an option. So.
Right.
And trust me, I got a whole big thing planned for next week or the week after about hardware because I'm going through a situation here that I'm really happy. I want to share about it on a future show.
Okay. Cool.
Are you ready for emails, Dor?
As long as we got some, sure. Oh. Really quick, we forgot to mention, there's a new email address.
Ah, yes.
Yep. podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And I'll say this here to our listeners, only amongst us, keep to yourself. I do plan this. Now, if you listen to Steve C long term, you're going to understand the verbiage I'm using. I do plan in the very near future to change the main Linux for the Rest of Us page to be a page displaying current Linux information, updates, news feeds, a lot of information about the podcast, and have clickable links to the video product. When this is going to be done, I will not tell anyone a date because I'm not going to say it because I don't know. But in the near future, soon, coming to a browser near you, the information will be there, the chat will be there, the live link will be there, and right now, at least, the email is there.
Well, this is going to get bigger and better. And yeah, so for any future emails to the show, please email podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. Obviously, it's going to take, I mean, some people listen to it late, some people listen live and read live, guys. I really appreciate you guys being there, but we're not severing ties with Steve. He'll still forward us old email, and we'll be sure to answer everyone's questions as we get them. But yeah, for any from this point on, try to use the new address, and we're in the works of getting the new voicemail line set up as well, right, Dor?
Yes, and I will say, my excuse is going to be, you know, it might take some people weeks to catch up and listen to the cast, which is why the transition has taken so long.
There you go.
Yeah, wink, wink.
All I got to say is, presto, dog catcher, do it.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first email comes from Jay-Z, and Jay-Z writes, "What's up, Steve version 1.0 and Steve version 2.0, Dor being the Linux Maven has obviously been upgraded to version 2.0. I recently bought a used laptop with no OS on it and have installed Ubuntu 12.04. Everything worked flawlessly after the install. I did, however, run into a brick wall when trying to mount my Samba shares that are hosted on a separate Ubuntu 12.04 file server. Initially, I tried to put the CIFS entries into FSTAB, but the wireless signal doesn't initiate until after I log in, so the boot fails. Any recommendations on how to correct this? I've done a lot of research on this, and the only thing I can find that looked promising was the following article from January 2009 and is no longer a valid resolution for 12.04. I can't imagine I'm the only one who has this issue. I've only been using Linux for about a year, so I'm likely just being a noob. Anyways, love the show. You guys are one of the best Linux podcasts out there. Jay-Z." Thanks, Jay-Z.
No, Jay-Z, that's not a noob thing. Okay. In the Windows world, you accomplish this kind of thing by making something a service, okay? In fact, in the Windows world, I have no idea how to make a wireless connection connect before you log in, because that's the gist of this. Drive mounting is done at boot time, not at login time. Two ways around it. You can have a login script that goes via the new script application, maybe, where it goes out and creates the connection and then does the drive mapping after the fact. That's one option. I'm not a huge fan of that because then most of the time you're going to have to go through a lot of hoops to make that wireless password or the credentials to be password protected, encrypted. It's very easy to make a script where those credentials are out in the open, and it's a lot of work to not have them out in the open. So with that said, I suggest to do it the other way, to actually have the wireless network come up and make a connection at the same time as your regular network does. Because if you have a hardwired connection, basically a few seconds after you hit the power button, it's already doing network things. So I would encourage to do the inverse. And I will say, I'm going to blame Steve C for not forwarding this email to me because he's in the chat and likes to pick on him. There is a way to do it on boot. I'm not sure if I have the right way here or not, but I will make sure it is in the notes and I will try to verify it quickly, I'll say, where you can make it click in and connect way before you even log in. I will verify that before just saying it's the final answer.
Okay. Well, I hope we get some good help for you there. And Jay-Z, trust me, don't dismiss yourself just by saying, oh, I'm a noob, I don't know what I'm talking about. I haven't attached a Samba share to any of my Linux boxes or file servers before. So yeah, man, you're way above the curve on me on that. So just understand your level of understanding, be humble and realize you can always get better, and what a better place to come for help than us.
Right.
Cool. All right. Let's go on to the next one here. Ashley writes, hi, I was just listening to your show on Podnuts, which I enjoy often. Thank you for that. Okay, here's the reason for my message. I am not sure this is correct 100%, but I think it's close. The pronunciation of AvidMux, which is how you pronounce it, I believe. I have taken it to be two words appended, which are AVI, as in AVI video files, and DMux, as short for D multiplex. To split the audio from the video, as multiplex is to mix two or more things together. DMux is to separate them. So I say it as AVI DMux. I think that's how she pronounces it. I'm not sure if this is the correct pronunciation as intended, though. Hope you find this interesting. I'm nothing to do with the program, but have used it, and it's a great little tool. All the best, Ashley from the UK.
Yeah, I'll say sounds very competent and accurate to me. I didn't think of it as an AVI. I thought it is A space VID. You know, I think I had it wrong.
It's possible. And I'll say, Ashley, anytime you want to help us, especially Dor with his pronunciation, throw something our way.
Yeah, because trust me, there's plenty of opportunities you'll have.
What's the name of that program, Dor? The launcher that you use all the time? How do you say that?
You just gave me time to mentally prepare for it. It's Kupfer.
There you go.
When I don't have Kupfer. Time to mentally prepare for it is when I say it absolutely incorrect.
Yes. But you know what? It's only recognizing those little mental hurdles that it's going to help us to jump over them in the future.
Right.
And I will, now, Ashley, I appreciate your email, and I'm sure Dor does, and our listeners, but I will say there was a person that was trying to correct Steve and Dor way back in the day on the pronunciation of a certain distro, and I have ribbed him ever since about it in consequent voicemails. But I won't rib you at all. Thank you very much for the, and anything we can do to better get the message out there, I'm all for it.
Okay. Now, it's a super quick. I found the way to have the network on wireless start up and connect at boot, not at startup, but at boot. This way, I will say it does keep your secret password, quote unquote, secret password in a file that I do believe is actually readable from a user with no permissions. It's etc network interfaces. Actually, that's probably not readable by a standard user, but of course, any user with a boot disk will be able to access that and look at it. And I believe that's where this information is stored. So I have a way to do it. It's not the most secure way to do it. It will be in the notes. I'm going to ask if you could, after the show, Cody, send this link back to them. If they need something more secure than this, let me know and I'll do more digging.
Yeah, we'll get the information out to you, Jay-Z, one way or another, very soon.
Oh,
okay.
And I will say, there's a posting in the chat from Rick Rauch. I don't know. I can't read it. To the Avid AVI DMux forums on pronunciation, where I think they're going back and forth in their own world, almost arguing about how it's pronounced. That's right. Fantastic.
Ultimately, it doesn't matter. As long as you know what I'm talking about and you can pick up what I'm laying down, we're fine.
True, true.
But if I can rib anybody for what they say and how they say it, I'll do it on almost any occasion. So watch out. Okay, one more email. Well, actually, two more. Brett writes, I had a laugh when I heard the Linux for the Rest of Us show number 97, he thinks, when you mentioned the super secret keyboard shortcuts in Linux. I think it was Control F for screen clear. here's some more. And then he lists probably 10 to 12 others, which I won't go into length, but we will. I'll try to get these into the show notes. But yeah, I didn't know about any of these little shortcuts. And to see them now, like, some of them are kind of funny. Some were like legitimately useful. So I'll definitely test out and play with a lot of these. Do you use a lot of these, Dora? Were you the one that mentioned Control F?
I didn't mention Control F. We actually had another listener talking about Control F, which I did not know about Control F. I kept literally typing. I think it was C-L-E-A-R. Enter. Oy vey. Oh. That makes me feel really dumb. I had only knew about two of these other commands. Also, I'm not going to lie. I will be utterly honest with people. I am utterly ADHD about my terminal behavior, and it's whatever I think of the very first time to get something to work is what I continuously do for now until forever, until someone walks up to me with like a banana cream pie of easy manipulation in a command terminal and shoves it in my face. So I now literally have a little printout next to my computer with these terminal shortcuts on it, just so I don't forget.
Hey, visual references never hurt. Yeah. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yep. And especially when it comes to the command line, man. Holy cow. All right. Last voicemail. Matt from the Sunday Morning Linux Review writes, in reference to the break-in of the congressman's office with the breaking the windows and then the reinstallation of the computers. He says, we talked about this several weeks ago on the Sunday Morning Linux Review. There were two unrelated incidents. Local vandals who were later apprehended are responsible for breaking the windows. On the same night, I'm assuming pre-window breaking, a computer tech working on the Windows systems left live run disks in the computers by mistake.
Oh, see, I did hear it was possibly not connected, so I got to thank Matt for that. I know I listened to his show, but I don't remember them saying explicitly they were positive about it. Maybe. I don't know. Either way, Matt, you're the man. Thank you very much. And yes, it wouldn't shock me if no one in the office is competent enough to understand their data is still on their computer. Just pop the CD open, pop the CD tray open, take the CD out and reboot their computer.
So I wonder if the tech did it. Have way maliciously just to mess with them then? Probably, because why else would you leave a bunch of live CDs in the trays of the systems? I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing I could think was maybe they were around or they knew that the windows were getting ready to get busted, so they split town. That's the only thing I think of. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll investigate it further, and then I'll email the Sunday Morning Linux Review so I can let them know that I clarified it on our show. And they can let their listeners know what's really up.
Right, and don't forget to remind them that he lost $10 to you.
Oh, yeah. That was... I know you guys are sick of OLF stories. I'm not going to mention this for very long, but let's just say Matt bet me 10... Or Matt bet... Well, you said $10. Matt bet me $10 that I couldn't guess his exact age to the year. And I did my little peek at him for about 5 seconds. I rattled off a number, and he just about flipped out. Like, how did you know that? Said, well, I used to sell alcohol for about 15 years, but looking at me, you didn't think I was that old, did you? Best $10 I ever made.
Yeah, and I'll say, I'm horrible at it. I never get it right. And then he turned to me and asked, and I was 1 year off.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But anyway, it was a pleasure meeting those guys. Matt, is it Tony, right? Matt, Tony, and Mary?
Yes, yes.
Am I right? Yep, yep. Yeah, Mary. And because of them, and I'll get into this next week, I'm throwing KDE on one of my boxes, and I'm going to give it another try because they just went gung ho. You got to run KDE. You got to run KDE. I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try.
Well,
I'll give it a try.
Two of them are really heavily. Well, you got to wait. Every week, Matt might change his mind. Mary's a very big KDE person. I will tell you the version of KDE kind of does matter. So just do a little bit of research in the differences from 4.7, 4.8, and 4.9, because I believe they're the three most prevalent versions, the latest three. So a distro might only have version 4.7 or 4.8, where Mary might say, you need to go 4.9.
Yeah, I've installed so many distros before where I'm not going to be swayed by, you know, a DE or a version of a DE and be like, oh, this is all garbage, and then just completely rely on it. But yeah, maybe I'll send them an email and let them know what they suggest. And anything I find out in my experience, I'll definitely let you guys know, so that if you want to run KDE, I'll give you my experience on it.
Very cool.
Great. Well, that about wraps up the show. Dor, you got anything else closing out? Where can we reach you?
Yeah, Steve, thanks for sending us the voicemail. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's right here. Oh, wait, it's not here. Okay, yeah. That's fine.
It doesn't matter because we don't have the hardware set up for it yet. But I still like to pick on him. Not that he's...
we'll get it. We'll get it, guys. Come on.
Because what I'm hoping is... I don't expect him to listen to the whole show before him, but I do expect him to at least jump to the end and listen to a second. And hopefully he jumped in right there at that spot.
One can only hope.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to know more about me, go to door2doorgeek.com. All the links to the videos, the links to all the podcasts except for Solo SOS, which isn't up yet and in production, into post-production yet, but there will be a link there for that too. Don't forget podnuts.com/lounge is the IRC where guys like Highlander and Acid Burn never gave up on that page. They've been there forever. And anyone who comes into the room, they will just chat with or help with or ask questions of them. Really good people, good times. Also, don't forget podnuts.com/forums. Really nice place, really nice people, really smart people. For any kind of computer repair help, especially, that is the place to go. And there is no app rundown because this is a different show.
That's right. It wouldn't it be great if there was, if you just had one?
No. I think it would. I messed that one up enough already.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dor. I'm Cody Cooper. You can hit me up on Google+. Just Cody Cooper, CodyCooper. I have a website up, but it's just a landing page. Don't go there. Also, yeah, definitely hit up the Podnuts forums. I'm looking forward to becoming more active in that because I can't think. I don't want to think the last time I posted on there. But man, I love forums. If you want to view forums, try Tap a Talk on Android or iOS. Awesome, awesome app. Definitely worth the $2 it costs. And as always, hit up Jonathan Nato, our good friend at the ACF.co, Accessible Computing Foundation. Great, worthwhile cause. If you can donate to them monthly or just to contribute in any way possible, it's just going to put accessibility that much further ahead. And we'll get these computing platforms in the hands of people who need it, who are in danger of being left behind. So that being said, thank you very much. I don't have like a sign off yet. Like, you know, Steve always said, see you next time. I'm going to work on it. If you guys have ideas for my sign offs, throw them to me on Google+ at Cody Cooper. Other than that, thank you very much. Thank you very much to the live people. Thank you very much for people listening to this in the future and people watching this on YouTube in the future. Thank you very much. And we will see you soon. Take care, guys.